Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gann, and for the next hour and a half, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. Of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. And get send messages to the show on Twitter, at Go4Gann. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow, at Go4Gann. I follow back. So make sure you listen and hit us up on Twitter, at Go4Gann. Follow me, I'll follow you back, and we'll have a good old time. We'll have a good old time. A good old time. Expected today to be joined by former NFL player, actor, the one, the only, the great Isaac Keys. And we're going to bring Isaac on in and we're going to talk some NFL football and talk some of his acting, talk about some of the things he has going on in terms of off the well. He's retired now. So in terms of some of the things he has going on with Mick Cafe and The Therapist, which is a big-time web show, which my wife is actually a big fan of. So look forward to talking to Isaac Keys about some of the happenings in the National Football League. And I'm going to start with some of the happenings in the National Football League. And I'm going to start in Philadelphia with Michael Vick. Michael Vick, dynamic quarterback, all the ability in the world, all the speed in the world, just a breathtaking football player. Had a subpar year. I mean, it was an awful year, but he didn't have a good year for the Eagles. I mean, bottom line is he turned the football over way too much. That whole team last year just did not get it right from the start to the end. Well, the end they played pretty well, but they didn't get it right for a large part of that season. A big part of the Eagles' success is going to be the health of Michael Vick. If Michael Vick can't stay healthy, the Eagles have no shot. They just have no shot. Vick has to stay healthy in order for this Eagle team to be successful. He has to stay healthy. He has to. 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 He has to be healthy if the Eagles want to go anywhere. If the Eagles want to go anywhere, Michael Vick has to be healthy. He wasn't healthy for three games last year. And Eagles won 1-2 in those games. But even before that, he went out in the Falcon game. He went out in the Giant game. So he didn't finish games either. Michael Vick, in order for Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles to be where they think they belong and where they're going to be, in order to have that dynasty, Michael Vick is going to have to stay healthy. The first two preseason games, 12 plays for Michael Vick pretty much, the first two preseason games have shown us that at this point, it's going to be tough for Michael Vick to stay healthy. And I look at Michael Vick and he reminds me so much of Allen Iverson. So much of Allen Iverson. They are both Virginia boys. AI was a successful high school quarterback in Virginia, one of the better quarterbacks in Virginia high school history. But the thing about Iverson, the thing about Vick, dynamic talents, put up big-time numbers, takes your breath away with some of the things they do on the court and on the field, all those things, all those things. But the thing about those guys is their style of play. You look at AI. AI took a lot of contact. He was banged up throughout the course of his career. Took a lot of contact. Allen Iverson took it to the hole. It didn't matter. He took a lot of contact. He's dynamic. A special talent, obviously. Michael Vick is a special talent as well. He's a special talent as well. But you look at the problem with Michael Vick and sometimes the problem with Allen Iverson is those guys have too much heart. It's just too much heart sometimes. I mean, the player Michael Vick got hurt on, his basic instinct is to try to keep the play alive, try to do things to make a play. He's not a guy that's going to run a throw a play away because of his ability, because of his skill set, because of things he can do. Michael Vick can take a rabbit out of a hat. He can do that. He can do that. He has that type of game. He has that type of ability. But the thing about it is, in that particular situation, a preseason football game, it might have been in the best interest of Michael Vick to just throw the ball away and just live to play another day. But that's just not who he is. That's just not who he is. And as much as we all try to tell him, and everybody, all the fans, and even the president, Barack Obama, told Michael Vick that he needs to learn how to slide, needs to learn how to not take those big-time hits. As much as we can say all those things, a lot of football comes down to instinct. It comes down to smarts, it comes down to abilities, and it comes down to instincts as well. And sometimes your natural instincts is to do what you have to do to survive. Sometimes it's like if you look at it, a dog is chasing you. And sometimes it's in your best interest when a dog is chasing you to just try to stand there and not rile him up by running. But the natural instincts, when you see a dog, a stray dog, is to run. And from that perspective, I believe if a dog is chasing me, I don't want to go down just standing there and him biting me. I want to go down with him having to catch me, him having to run and chase me and catch me. If he's going to get me, he's going to have to chase me. I'm not going to be a sitting duck. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not. But the thing about Michael Vick, the thing about Allen Iverson, those guys, their size, not big guys, obviously, short in stature. Not big guys at all. Not big guys at all. But the thing about those boys, the thing about those guys is they have so much heart, so much ability, so tough. I mean, Allen Iverson, he would just continue to go in and battle and take it to the hole against the bigs of the world, against the Shaqs of the world, against anybody. I mean, you could not deter Allen Iverson. He was that guy. And Michael Vick, he's a similar in his makeup, his mental makeup. Those guys are just tough son of a guns. Tough SOBs, those guys. Tough guys there. They're not going to just roll over. They're going to do what they have to do to try to make a play. That's just who they are. AI, if it's shooting 30 times, if that's what it needs to, if that's what he needs to do to win, that's what he's going to do. Michael Vick, if that means running, he's going to do what he has to do. If that means even taking a big hit, he's going to do what he's going to have to do. And there's no changing that about Michael Vick. That's just who he is. That's just who he is as a football player. And the thing about Michael Vick, some of the things over the years, I mean, I remember against the Washington Redskins, I believe it was 2011, Donovan McNabb made his return to Philadelphia. And Michael Vick, running the football, breaks from the line, gets into the secondary, and he just lowers his head, and just gets sandwiched and crunched by D'Angelo Hall, and I forgot who the other guy was. And he broke his ribs. It messed up his ribs for a few weeks. I mean, that's the thing about Michael Vick. He has that toughness. And he, as much as we can tell him to learn how to slide, and he really hasn't learned to do that. They tried to do it in Atlanta. Really wasn't successful in getting that done in Atlanta. I mean, it's just who he is. It's just who he is. With all that being said, I think he's going to have a good year in Philadelphia. I think he's going to have a good year. and I think he's going to he has a lot to prove. And if you look at it, his salary becomes very manageable after this year. So in terms of cutting him, if the Eagles wanted to sever ties with him after this year, it's not a big-time cap hit for the ball club. So this is a big year for Michael Vick. And then you got the young boy, Nick Foles, there, who's been very impressive in this preseason, who is playing like, I mean, it's only the preseason. You don't want to get too excited and too high over a couple preseason games. I mean, it's preseason. It is what it is. It's preseason. But Nick Foles has shown some ability at this point. He definitely not a scrub. At least we don't think so. At least we don't think so. We'll see. And around the NFL, a lot of young guys now are taking over in the NFL in terms of quarterback play. You go to Tennessee now, and the Titans actually are playing tonight against the Arizona Cardinals. And you look at the Tennessee Titans now, and last year Matthew Hasselbeck was the starter. Got the Titans pretty close to the playoffs. Just missed out. They finished the season at 9-7. But you got the young quarterback in Jake Locker, a young guy, a lot of potential, seems to have a lot of ability, and is actually playing well tonight in the preseason game against the Cardinals. But he wins the job over Matt Hasselbeck, and not really surprising. It's really not surprising. You know, Matt Hasselbeck hasn't shown a lot. He still has some game, but, I mean, if you're the Tennessee Titans, it's probably in your best interest now to turn it over to the quarterback of the future. That's Jake Locker, a guy who seems to have all the tools, all the size, and all the ability. And you look at the Tennessee Titans, and where are they going? Are the Tennessee Titans a team that you think can vie for a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Even with a healthy Matt Hasselbeck, even with Matt Hasselbeck at his best, are the Tennessee Titans a Super Bowl team? No, I don't think so. And with that being said, I think putting in a Jake Locker, to me, is not a bad move for the Tennessee Titans. Not a bad move at all. Matt Hasselbeck, 36 years old, obviously not getting any younger. And again, what is the ceiling for the team with Matt Hasselbeck as the quarterback? And I think that's what the way you have to look at it. And looking at it that way, I think it's obvious and very evident that, to me, Jake Locker is the obvious move for the Tennessee Titans. Jake Locker, to me, is the obvious move there for the Tennessee Titans. Obvious move in my mind. And I think a good move for the Tennessee Titans. We'll see how good he is. We'll definitely see how good he is. And that'll tell us all. And the season will tell us all we need to know about Jake Locker, at least for now. Still early, still young, and obviously he could get better or he could be worse. He could be not the guy that we think he is or could be. So we'll see. We'll see. But you look around the National Football League and you look at some other quarterback competitions. Obviously you have the John Skelton, Kevin Cobb battle to see who will be the quarterback in Arizona. Both of these guys haven't really stood out. Both of these guys, they're I don't really know how good Jake Locker is really. I'm not Jake Locker. John Skelton really is going to be. And quite frankly, I don't think Kevin Cobb is going to be all that good either. But Kevin Cobb over the years has shown us some things, has shown us some flashes, and John Skelton had some success near the end of last year with the Arizona Cardinals. So he was pretty effective as a starter, 5-2 as a starter for the Tennessee, not the Tennessee Titans, for the Arizona Cardinals. So he's fairly effective. Kevin Cobb, he can't stay healthy. And that's the biggest problem for Kevin Cobb. He can't stay healthy. A little jittery in the pocket, kind of skittish, as Tommy Kelly for the Oakland Raiders would say. Kind of skittish. And Isaac Kesey actually tweeted just a few minutes ago, if your quarterback don't have the time to throw the ball, then he can't use his star players. Cardinals' weakness has always been O-line, and right now the Cardinals are having some issues on the offensive line. Levi Brown, the right left tackle, he's out for the year. And so DJ Young is going to step in, a guy we had on the show a few months back, actually. DJ, a good guy, and I'm wishing him nothing but the best of luck. I hope he does well in that particular position as the tackle there in Arizona. But, I mean, Levi Brown's a big loss. It's a big loss for the Cardinals. And at the end of the day, if you feel like the offensive line is the problem, and one of the problems in Arizona, if you can't protect the quarterback, you won't have success. You won't have success. If you can't protect a quarterback, you won't have success. I mean, Levi Brown's going to expect him to miss 3 months, but essentially he could have missed the whole year for the Arizona Cardinals. So we'll see if DJ Young can step in and be effective for the Arizona Cardinals. But at this point, they need to settle on a quarterback. They need to start figuring out where they want to go. Financially, it's Cobb. In terms of John Skelton and his promise, I mean, he did win some games for the Cardinals last year. He definitely won some games for the Arizona Cardinals. He definitely did. He really did win some games for the Cardinals last year. Big-time games for the Cardinals, and kept them around. He kept them around last year. Kept the Cardinals around in terms of the playoff hunt. Obviously, the Cardinals, we're not going to get to the playoffs. But John Skelton played decent. He really played decent for the Cardinals. He really did. And in Miami, another rookie quarterback will start, and that will be Ryan Tannehill. And Tannehill beat out Matt Moore. David Garrard was hurt, so I guess by default he beat him out as well. And I look at the Miami Dolphins. I think the Titans are a better team than the Dolphins, but you look at the Miami Dolphins, a team that's really not going anywhere. They're not really going anywhere. The wide receiver position is atrocious. Their defense is just okay. I mean, it's not a lot of talent in Miami. Not a lot of talent in Dolphin land. Just not. Not a lot of talent. Not a lot of talent in Miami. And the wide receiver position is thin. You cut or release, arguably, your best wide receiver in Chad Johnson. You cut your best wide receiver in Chad Johnson. And, you know, I mean, do I think Chad Johnson deserves another chance? I think he did. But the reality is, the Dolphins are not going anywhere. And the bottom line is this. In this league, Matt Moore is a journeyman quarterback. David Garrard's coming off back injury. Also now he's hurt with his knee. So you don't know what you have there. The reality is the Miami Dolphins were probably going to stink regardless of Matt Moore, regardless of David Garrard, and regardless of Ryan Tannehill being the quarterback. So you might as well get the rookie's feet wet. In Miami, you might as well get his feet wet, and you might as well see what you have there with the young rookie, and could be a franchise-caliber quarterback. They drafted him to be that, so we'll see if he will be that. We'll see if he will be that franchise-caliber quarterback. We shall see. And then in Seattle, a battle for their quarterback job in Seattle. Big-time battle. Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn. And Russell Wilson, a rookie out of Wisconsin, has been very, very impressive in this preseason. Very impressive. But Russell Williams has been impressive. He really has. I can't say it anymore how impressive he has been. And then you have Matt Flynn, who's there, and Tavares Jackson, who's really not getting a shot at this job. He's really not getting a shot at this job, pretty much. Seems to come down to Russell Wilson and Matt Flynn. And you figure bringing in Flynn in from Green Bay and $10 million in guarantees, you figure he would be the guy. You figure he would be the guy who would have the shot, or at least the most of a chance or the biggest opportunity to win the starting job. You would think it would be him. You would think it would be him. And right now, he's in a battle. He's definitely in a battle. Definitely in a battle with Russell Wilson and with Tavares Jackson, seemingly. Old saying is, you got three quarterbacks, you got none. And so you give, like I said, you give a Matt Flynn a three-year, $26 million deal, 10 which is guaranteed. 10 which is guaranteed, you expect him to be the guy. You expect him to be the guy. You would expect him to be the guy because of the financial situation. Like a Kevin Cobb, you would expect him to be the guy. But if Russell Wilson is out playing him, and Russell Wilson will start the next preseason game for the Seahawks, so that has you thinking as well. That's the third preseason game. That is usually the dress rehearsal for the season. So you would think Russell Wilson would have an inside shot to the job. You would think he would have a shot at the job. You would think he would have a shot at the job. And it's the third preseason game, and let me reiterate, that is usually the dress rehearsal in the National Football League. Usually the dress rehearsal in the National Football League. So, will he get the job? Will he get the job? Can Russell Wilson get the job? We shall see. We shall see. But a lot of interesting QB battles going on in the National Football League. A lot of battles. A lot of teams vying. A lot of players vying to be the starting quarterbacks for their franchise in the 2012 NFL season. We shall see how it works out. You look at the New York Jets. I mean, their quarterback situation. Obviously, Mark Sanchez is the guy you would assume after the extension they gave him. And Tim Tebow is still there. And you watched the Jets last week against the New York Giants. That quarterback situation for the Jets was abysmal. I mean, absolutely abysmal. They can't protect the quarterback, Sanchez or Tebow. I mean, that offensive line for the New York Jets has been bad. Let's be real here. The Jets offensive line has been bad. Has been awful in this preseason. I watched the Jets against the Bengals a few weeks back. Awful. 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 Absolutely awful. That offensive line for the Jets. The Bengals harassed Mark Sanchez. And then the Giants did the same. They gave him issues. They gave him problems. Gave him problems. Big time problems. Big time problems. Big-time problems. And they can't protect a quarterback. They cannot protect a quarterback in New York. And I look at the Jets, and they've been horrible in this preseason. They really have on the offensive side of the ball. I'm not one to read a lot into the preseason. I don't know how much you really can read into the preseason. I mean, over the years, remember the Buffalo Bills in the 90s? Perfect example of why you cannot read into the preseason. Buffalo Bills were awful in the preseason. Absolutely awful in the preseason. And those were the teams that were getting to the Super Bowl on a regular with Jim Kelly and those guys. Absolutely awful in the preseason. Absolutely awful. So I look at that and I say, how much can you read into what we see in the preseason? How much? How much? And I don't think you can read a lot. I don't think you can read a lot into the preseason. You really can't. You see good things. You say, oh, this player is playing pretty well or that player is standing out. But how much really can you read into that? The defenses are vanilla. The game plan, little to no game planning. So how much really can you read into the preseason? You can start thinking about some things and saying, well, this guy playing well and this guy's doing this and that, what have you. But at the end of the day, it is the preseason. It is the preseason. So how much can you read into it? We shall see. We shall see. And Jim Irsay, a mad tweeter, tweets all the time, and he tweeted today, actually, serious trade winds are blowing. So I don't know what that means. Does that mean that the Cardinals are preparing to make a big-time trade? The Colts are preparing to make a big-time trade. Is that what that means? I mean, Jim Irsay does a lot of talking. Does a lot of talking. You could probably argue that he does too much talking. Does too much talking. And I can make that argument. I think he talks too much. I think he talks too much. But hey, he's the owner. He cuts the check. He makes the big-time money. So, at the end of the day, I guess he can do whatever he wants in a lot of ways. It's his prerogative. His prerogative. But and just looking around the National Football League now, going around the league, a lot of things have been said about the replacement officials. Obviously, in the National Football League, you got a $1 billion business, $1 billion product. You want the best of the best officiating your games. You want the best of the best making sure that the rules are being followed in the game. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I think a lot of talk about the replacement officials is probably a little overblown. I mean, it's probably a little overblown. But I will say this, you know, you want the best to do it. And with that being said, I think if you're the NFL, you need to take care of this whole situation. And it's Roger Goodell, he feels like right now that the replacement refs are doing a good job. And as he was quoted as saying, these officials have been trained, we've been working with them, and we think they'll do a credible job. And, I mean, I think when it's all said and done, when these officials, the replacement officials, when the season starts and if they're still there, I think they will do a decent job. Could you argue that they'll do the same? Could you argue that they'll do as good of a job as the real officials, if you will? Could you make that argument? Could you make that argument? I don't know. I mean, they're not the refs that we have seen, that we have known, and I guess loved over the years in the National Football League. They're not those guys. They're not those guys. But to Roger Goodell's point, to his quote, could they do a credible job? Probably. But could they do the best job or the job as good as the regular officials? Probably not. So I think it's important for the league to try to settle this thing, and they will. I can't imagine the league going into the year with replacement officials. And especially, could you imagine if they do go into the league into the into the season with these officials. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if they go into the season with these replacement officials and the replacement official blows a big-time call in a big-time situation to cost the team a ball game? Could you imagine? Could you imagine? Could you imagine? That's why I think the league is going to do whatever they can do to get the real refs back in play before the season starts, and I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen. Moving also around the National Football League, DeSean Jackson had some interesting comments the other day. According to Lisa Salters of ESPN, DeSean Jackson said, "I was trying to protect myself from getting hurt. Now I'm just giving it all." Now, DeSean Jackson said that his comments were kind of taken out of context. And let me read it again, what he told Lisa Salters. "I was trying to protect myself from getting hurt. Now I'm just giving it all." Now, that was turned around and spun in a way where people were saying that DeSean Jackson pretty much said he didn't give his all last year. Now, I guess if you look at those comments, you can spin it in that way, but I don't think that's what he was saying. I think what he was saying is now he doesn't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to worry about it. And I don't think you look at DeSean Jackson. Let's look at DeSean Jackson last year. You could say, I think his whole thing, what he was trying to say is that subconsciously it affected him. But if you look at his play, DeSean Jackson played like a distracted football player. He played like a distracted football player last season for the Philadelphia Eagles. If he didn't give his all, then shame on him. But at the same time, if he didn't give his all, I don't blame him in some respect. Because DeSean Jackson has to, and I say this numerous times, I'm going to repeat myself again. DeSean Jackson and NFL players as a whole have to make as much money as possible in such a short time period. If they don't, some of these guys are so broke up, so beat up, that they cannot hold a regular 9-to-5 job. Can't do it. Can't hold a 9-to-5 job because of football-related injuries. So with that being said, looking at DeSean Jackson, he's a guy now, last season playing for $500,000. Obviously, DeSean Jackson outplayed his contract. Obviously, the Eagles probably should have did something with DeSean Jackson in terms of his contract. And you look at DeSean Jackson and this whole situation, that affected the Philadelphia Eagle team. It really did. And you look at DeSean Jackson, you look at the game against the Arizona Cardinals where he said that, where he was deactivated by Andy Reid. And because he was deactivated, the Eagles offense, one of the reasons the Eagles offense struggled in that game was because of the absence of DeSean Jackson and his big play ability. Excuse me. And his ability to get down the field. So you had a distracted DeSean Jackson, who is your number one wide receiver. He's distracted now. Your number one wide receiver, distracted. Distracted because he didn't get paid. DeSean Jackson misses the Cardinal game, deactivated in that particular football game. DeSean Jackson, you remember the game against the New England Patriots? He dropped a long touchdown pass, and he also alligator-armed a play in that particular game, which would have been another touchdown in that game. You saw it. You saw a guy who was distracted. You saw a guy that subconsciously, and I'm not saying DeSean Jackson didn't give his all, because I think he was definitely distracted. He definitely was distracted. He was distracted. He was distracted. And it showed. It showed. He was distracted. Now, do I think he did things to protect himself? Was he doing things to protect himself? Maybe. Maybe. But he's only so big. He's not the biggest wide receiver in the world, not the biggest guy in the world. And you remember 2 years ago, he was blown up against the Falcons, blown up in that particular ball game, had a concussion. He's had some concussions. And with the crackdown on concussions and the NFL seemingly doing things about it, you got to do things, I guess, coming from Deshaun Jackson's perspective. You got to do things to protect yourself. You got to do things to protect yourself. And I guess it's no different than anybody else on the job who is in a job that can be dangerous, can get you hurt, where you could get hurt, injured, and possibly even die, because football, you can even die in a football game. I mean, you can die in a football game. It can happen. I mean, I hope it never happens, but I would not be surprised if it does happen. I mean, there's some big guys, bigger, stronger, faster guys, and coming at you with that rate of speed, anything is possible. Anything is possible. But if I'm Deshaun Jackson, I mean, if let's just say you're a mechanic and at your job, you feel like you deserve a raise, you feel like you're not getting paid what you deserve to get paid, you might subconsciously, or any job, I'm just using mechanic, but any job, you might subconsciously in the back of your mind say, well, I'm not going to give my all here, or I got to protect myself here. I'm going to do things to protect myself because I got to protect my investment. I got to protect who I am. I have to protect certain things, or I'm not going to give my all because I'm not getting paid the money that I deserve to get paid. Guys might do that. Guys may do that. People do that. People do that at jobs when they feel like they're not getting paid what they deserve to get paid. People do that. And Deshaun Jackson tweeted the other day, media love twisting my words up, and they always wonder why I don't want to talk to their butts. Their A's, their bleeps, he should say. That ish is unprofessional. He took the I out of sugar honey iced tea. I think you know, you look at those comments, and you can take those comments any which way. Because you look at the comments, I was trying to protect myself from getting hurt. Now I'm giving it my all. So if you're protecting yourself from not getting hurt, are you truly giving your all? You could twist those words around, and it's not really twisting. You could move those words around pretty much and come up with that conclusion that Deshaun Jackson was not giving his all, had not gave his all in 2011. You could make, and you just look at his play, look at his mannerisms, just look at what he produced on the football field last year. Even with all the distractions in terms of his contract and everything, Deshaun Jackson still was almost a 1,000-yard receiver. 58 catches, 961 yards, 4 touchdowns. So he wasn't far away from a 1,000-yard season. Was not far away from a 1,000-yard season, even with all the distractions and everything. Could you imagine if the Eagles really had taken care of this guy last year and he ended up taking care of him this year? Well, what took so long? I mean, you might as well have taken care of this guy. You should have took care of this guy last year. And if you take care of Deshaun Jackson, Eagles possibly make the playoffs. They're possibly in the playoffs if you take care of Deshaun Jackson. Your number one wide receiver, one of your best offensive players, weapons, a home run hitter. In the punt return game, a home run hitter. and a home run hitter as a wide receiver, of course. He's a home run hitter. And the Eagles did not take care of him. They did not take care of him. They ended up taking care of him. But it was, it's not too late, obviously, but you should have took care of him last year. You would not have been in the position that you were in 2011 with DeSean Jackson, and where you wouldn't have had to worry about a quote-unquote distracted football player. That would not have been your issue or your problem last year. Hopefully, after this money, he got his money now, and now that he's paid, I don't envision him being an issue for the Eagles. One issue for the Eagles, and I talked about earlier, is trying to keep Michael Vick healthy. And over the past few weeks, and I'm going to go to the switch gears to the National Basketball Association, the NBA, over the past few weeks, we've heard so much talk about the comparisons of Michael Jordan to LeBron James. LeBron James did what Michael Jordan did back in 92, won a championship, and ultimately won a gold medal, and won the MVP. He did it all. It was the year of LeBron James. It was the year of LeBron James. 2012 was LeBron James's year. In 1992, 20 years ago, was Michael Jordan's year. It really was. But one guy who is not ready to put LeBron in that Michael Jordan world, in that Michael Jordan talk, is Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade is actually having a foundational event this week, and he talked about LeBron James. And Dwayne Wade knows about Michael Jordan also well. He's a Chicago kid. And he was quoted as saying, talking about Jordan and LeBron, he's one that we haven't seen with the makeup of a 6'8 guy who runs as fast as any point guard, jumps as high as any center, and has the ability that he has to do so many things. But Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. That's who everyone shoots for. So it's going to be hard to surpass that, and he's so right. It's going to be hard to surpass Michael Jordan. It's going to be hard to surpass Michael Jordan, but in terms of skill set, LeBron is a better passer than Jordan, I believe. Magic-like passing ability. LeBron is a do-it-all in terms of rebounding, probably a better rebounder than Michael Jordan. But where Jordan is a stone-cold killer, and Jordan is a better scorer than LeBron. LeBron can score in this game. He can score, but he's not as pure of a scorer as Michael Jordan. He's just not. His jump shot is not as good as Michael Jordan. Probably a better finisher, if not just as good as Michael Jordan. I mean, he's a locomotive, 6'9", and coming down the lane, he's a locomotive. He's a tough one to stop. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have the rings that Jordan has. Jordan has 6. He only has 1. Jordan, like I said, was a stone-cold killer. LeBron, though he was clutching this year's NBA Finals, he doesn't have the killer instincts, even of a Kobe Bryant, and definitely not of a Michael Jordan. Doesn't have it. Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. And I think a lot of times when we talk about Michael Jordan, we talk about no one being able to surpass Michael Jordan. No one will ever be Michael Jordan. Has that next Michael Jordan, the one that's going to surpass Michael Jordan, has he been born yet? probably has been born. I'm not sure if he, where he's at. If he hasn't been born, maybe he's in some lucky woman's belly at this point. But Michael Jordan obviously was special. But just like anything in life, ultimately, there will be another Michael Jordan to come around. I don't know when he's coming. I don't know what he's going to look like. I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe you can argue that there is. We've seen it. We've seen the second coming of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. I mean, Kobe Bryant's probably the closest we have gotten to Michael Jordan. Probably the closest we have gotten to Michael Jordan. The closest. LeBron James can do a lot. He's obviously a special talent. We just talked about some of the things that he can do. And it's very obvious what he can do. But he still has to win some more rings before we can have this discussion. I think this discussion is still a little premature. But, we can start having this discussion. Let LeBron get at least three more. Get him three more, and then we can start having this discussion. Give him three more. Three more. You give him three more, and then possibly we can start having this discussion. But at this stage of the game, I can't do it. I can't do it. But you do see a different LeBron James. I think you saw a different one at the Olympics, and obviously you saw a different LeBron James in the NBA Finals. We saw a different guy. We saw a guy that stepped up and made plays when he needed to make plays, was big time when he needed to be big time, and had signature moments in these playoffs, 40-18 against Indiana, obviously. The big game against Boston, where he was just absolutely, positively on fire in that game. And that was a close. That was a game where Boston could have closed them out. And LeBron James went into Boston, and just was on fire. Could not miss in that particular game. He just could not miss in that game, and he came to Boston with a purpose. He had a purpose that particular night in Boston. He was special. He was absolutely special in that game. I mean, 19 for 26, 45 big points, 15 big rebounds, and 5 assists. I mean, he was absolutely big when he needed to be big. The Miami Heat's back were against the wall. Backs were against the wall. And LeBron James came out and just played exceptional. He played exceptional in that game. He was off the charts. 45 big points, 15 big rebounds, and 5 assists. He did it all. He did it all in that particular ball game. So it was very obvious, even in that game against Indiana, where the team needed him the most, he came up big, so big, 40 points, 18 big rebounds. I mean, those are big-time performances. And those are the type of things, the type of performances that legends are made of. I mean, you start talking, those are legendary performances. 45, 15, and 5 is a legendary performance in the playoffs. And then, game 4 against the Pacers, and I'm going back in these playoffs, game 4 against the Pacers, The Miami Heat down 2-1. Chris Bosh on the sidelines. LeBron James comes out. 40 big points. 18 big rebounds. And 9 assists. Almost messed around and got a triple-double. So you look at LeBron James. You look at Michael Jordan. He's not there yet. Could he get there? Yes, I think he could get there. He has all the potential. He has all the ability. He can do a lot on the basketball court. He probably can do more than Jordan. But Michael Jordan has 6 rings. LeBron James only has 1. But if he gets 3 more, if he gets to 4, then I'm ready to have that conversation. I'm ready to have that conversation about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. I'm ready to talk that talk. I'm ready. I'm ready to have that conversation. But I can't have it just yet. Not yet. And speaking of LeBron James and LeBron X sneaker to be released, and these shoes are expensive. You're talking about $290 to $300 for a pair of sneakers. My, oh, my. You're talking about close to $300 for a pair of sneakers. Can you think about the profit in terms of those sneakers? I mean, it don't take a lot of money to make sneakers. But, I mean, that's a lot of money. $300 for a pair of sneakers in a recession, in a bad economy. Now, if you don't have a lot of money, and if you got 2, 3, 4, 5 kids, and you know your kids want some new sneakers, and they want those LeBron X's, please do not get them for them. Please do not spend $300 on a pair of sneakers. You'd be an absolute fool. But you know what? There are fools out there who will pay that kind of money for those sneakers. There are fools out there who will pay $300 stinking dollars. $300. You can do a lot with $300. Buy a few suits, maybe. You can buy a wardrobe with $300. Depends where you shop. But you can buy a wardrobe for $300. And these sneakers will hit stores this fall. And so kids going back to school, in school, you know they're going to want these sneakers. You know they're going to chase waterfalls and try to get these sneakers. Because that's what you're doing. You're paying all that kind of money. $300 is a lot of money for a pair of sneakers. You got people out here who are broke. But they're going to, if their kid says they want those sneakers, they're going to find a way to buy those sneakers. But anybody who would be foolish enough to buy those sneakers for $300, shame on you. Shame on you. And you can't blame Nike. You can't blame LeBron either. You know what? If people are going to buy the shoe for $300, I mean, shoes aren't like drugs or alcohol or anything of that nature. If you're going to buy shoes for $300. You're going to buy shoes for $300. That's not LeBron's fault. That's not Nike's fault. If the consumer is going to pay it, then Nike is going to sell it. That's the bottom line. If the customer is willing to pay it, then Nike is definitely going to sell it. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. Is it? It's not LeBron's fault. It's not Nike's fault. It's the consumer's fault. If you're willing to pay that kind of money for a pair of sneakers, it's your fault. You're the stupid one. It's just like if you're getting overweight and you keep eating Big Macs, guess what? That's your fault. That's not McDonald's fault. If you're overweight, you're still eating Whoppers with a bunch of mayonnaise on it, fattening mayonnaise and cheese, guess what? And you get fat, that's your fault. Don't blame McDonald's. Don't blame Burger King. Don't blame them. Blame yourself. If you're fat and you're eating Tasty Cakes, you're eating Hostess Ding Dongs and all that other stuff, Honey Buns, if you're eating those things and you're fat, don't blame the people who make it. Blame yourself. People do have to take responsibility for themselves. I can't make you buy $300 shoes. But if you do it, if you do that, you're stupid. You're dumb. You're ridiculous. And I just have no words for you. But it's not LeBron James' fault. Even before that, Michael Jordan, his sneakers used to sell for hundreds of dollars. It's not his fault. But you wonder in terms of, okay, if Joe buys a pair of LeBron X's walking down the street and someone robs Joe of those LeBron X's, does that become LeBron James's fault? No, it does not. But people are going to try to blame LeBron James. People are going to try to blame LeBron James for it. People are definitely going to try to blame him. Should any sneaker be sold for $300? Probably not. But as I said a couple minutes ago, if there's people out there who are dumb enough to buy it, there are going to be people out there who are going to be willing to sell it. And Nike is willing to sell it. But you got to be kidding me. People are going to buy them, and I guess that's the sad part. They're going to buy them. They're definitely going to buy them. They're going to buy them. And I hope we all have deficiencies, we all have insecurities, so on and so forth, but if $300 is going to make you feel better about yourself, then $300 sneakers are going to make you feel better about yourself, you might need to sit down on somebody's couch. You might need to sit down on somebody's couch and talk about these things to get your self-esteem better. Because $300 for a pair of sneakers just does not make sense. Just doesn't make sense. But at the end of the day, it's not Nike's fault. It's not LeBron James's fault. If you're stupid enough to spend $300 on those sneakers, if you're that stupid, then you deserve to get ripped off, because that's what you're getting. You're getting ripped off. You're getting ripped off. And I guess the sad part from an African-American perspective is that these sneakers more than likely are going to be bought by African Americans. And unfortunately, I can see that a lot of African Americans are going to go out and buy these sneakers. As a brother myself, an African American myself, that just saddens me. Makes me sad. Makes me sad. And I know a lot of people are talking about this, but the reality is you got to be responsible for yourself. You got to show personal responsibility. And that's the problem with this world. That's the problem with this country. It's the problem with a lot of people today. They don't take personal responsibility for the things that they do. If you make a mistake, own up to it. If you father a child, take care of your baby. Same thing as the mothers. Take care of your baby. Take care of things. Be responsible. Be responsible. The second half hour, the last half hour of Go For It starts right now. Half hour, Go For It, and in this half hour, we're going to be joined by former NFL player Isaac Keys, and I know a lot of you probably remember Isaac Keys more for what he did on the Ultimate Merger with Omarosa than what he did in his NFL career. So we're going to talk to Isaac Keys about his NFL career, talk to Isaac Keys about what's going on in his acting career, and see if Isaac Keys found love. Because he did go on the show with Omarosa looking for love. Looking for love on a two-way street. Looking for love on a two-way street. And we'll see if he found it. We'll see if he found it. We'll see if he's in a serious relationship at this point. I know a lot of the ladies would like to know that. But we're going to get his take on some of the things going on in the National Football League. See what's going on in terms of his acting. And also, again, as I stated before, find out if he found love. And love is a beautiful thing if you can find it. It's so good loving somebody when that someone loves you back. And that's a fact. So we're going to talk to Isaac Keys about all those things. And great running back for many years, has called it quits, Clinton Portis. A guy that we had on this show, we have Clinton Portis on the show last season, during 2011 we had him on the show. And Clinton Portis at the time talked about wanting to get an opportunity to get back into the league, but he's called it quits. Says he's going to be a soccer dad now. He's called it quits at the age of 30. Wow. That's young. That's young, and big time back for many years for the Broncos and the Washington Redskins. I was surprised that he didn't get another opportunity close to 10,000 rushing yards, and he did a lot of work in his career. A colorful guy, funny guy. One thing I remember about Clinton Portis was his characters. And he had a lot of them. Each and every week he would come up and dress as somebody, whether it was Southeast Jerome. The list goes on and on of some of his characters. Bro Sweets. I mean, he had some funny characters, did some funny things, and I'm going to miss Clinton Portis. You know, he's a funny guy. Definitely a funny guy, a guy that doesn't take himself too seriously, a guy that was a good NFL running back for many years, a solid NFL running back for many years. But Clinton Portis, at the age of 30, has decided to call it quits. We'll see if he comes back. You wonder if he comes back. Or is he truly done? Is he truly done? I'm surprised. I thought he would give it a shot. I know that there were talks that I know his agent was saying a few months ago that there was a few teams interested in the services of Clinton Portis. But it just never happened. Just never happened. You don't know if that was just agent talk, trying to drum up some interest for his client or how legitimate that was. But he didn't get another shot after the Redskins let him go. And he came back and retired as a Washington Redskin. came back and retired as a Washington Redskin. And again, he'll be a guy, a funny guy over the years, very funny guy, Clinton Portis, and guy that put in work. Say what you will about the guy. Say some of the things about his characters that he had, and say all those things. But at the end of the day, Clinton Portis got it done. He put in work. He definitely put in work, and was a top-notch NFL running back for many years. But he called it quits now, 30 years old, and man, what a country to be able to retire at the age of 30. What a country to be able to retire at the age of 30. That would be nice, to be able to retire from the National Football League. And Clinton Portis made some decent money in his career. Definitely made some decent money in his career. So, you know, made his money. Hopefully he took care of his money. And hopefully he'll enjoy the next part of his life. That sack to becoming a soccer dad. He's going to be a soccer dad now. So hopefully he'll enjoy that, and wish him nothing but the best of luck moving forward. Again, Clinton Portis is a very colorful guy, very funny guy, and got it done in the league, got it done in the National Football League. And today he called it quits. Said it was time. And he was close to that 10,000-yard mark. And you thought again he would get that opportunity in the NFL. You thought he would get another shot. Very productive for many years. So you thought he would get another shot. He really did. Inspector Tutu, one of his characters, is gone. Dollar Bill is gone. Sheriff Gonna Get Ya is gone. Coach Janky Spanky is gone. Clinton Portis, done at the age of 30. But he's going to enjoy the other side of life after football. And I know another guy who's enjoying life after football, doing a lot of things in terms of acting, doing a lot of things in terms of modeling. I've seen him on magazines and everything. Let's bring him in now, former NFL linebacker, the one, the only, the great, Isaac Keys. Isaac, how are you, sir?
Well, you give a great introduction, man. That's why I love calling in. The great. I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to come on this show, man. You guys really talk, and you get real talk, real good conversation. So I know the listeners love it.
Definitely. And Isaac, and you tweeted this, and you talked about it. And let me read your tweet. If your QB don't have time to throw the ball, that he can't use the star players. Cardinals' weakness always been O-line, and talking about the Arizona Cardinals. Talk about your former Cardinal team.
Hey, man, I mean, going against that O-line over the years, even back then, 04, 05, 06, it's always been a weakness. I mean, even if I had to do the scout team cards or whatnot, not knowing, and we say scout team cards, that means you look at a card that the coach holds up, and you just figure out where your position lines up, and then you just let the offense run their play. So you really have no, you know, idea what this opposing team is running. But if I can make the play just by looking at a card, then that says something about the O-line. It says something about the, you know, the team, even though it was under a different head coach. But watching them over the years, their weakness has always been offensive line. If they've never been able to run the ball. They're never in the passing the ball. You know, they get it off and everything, but it's usually a quick step, three-step drops. And they get off to a quick slant to Larry Fitzgerald, then eventually open it up once the defense starts to clamp down and hit them on the long ball. And now they're even lacking more receivers. We need Michael Floyd to step up for the Cardinals right now. He's going to be a
definitely,
big, intricate part for them right now. But like I said, if the O-line does not block and give Cobb or Skelton time to throw the ball, then, I mean, defense is just going to sit back and just wait for him to get the third down and blitz.
And at this point, you look at the Cardinals over the years, in terms of quarterback play, you talked about the offensive line, but quarterback play has suffered. I mean, you could talk about Jake Plummer for a time being. He had some success in Arizona. Obviously, Kurt Warner had the most success over the past 10, 15 years in Arizona. But Cobb or Skelton, I mean, I don't know which one would give you the best opportunity to win at this point. Neither of them have had a great preseason. I guess if I was going to put my money – on it, I guess that you would have to go with Cobb, mainly because of the money that he's making. And he has shown some ability over the years in Philadelphia and a few sample sizes. But, I mean, he hasn't been great, obviously. Skelton hasn't been great, obviously. Who would you pick?
I think the key words key phrase you said was sample size. and I think that's what he's shown, sample size. I mean, last year with the Cardinals, they went through, I mean, hell with the injuries and going back and forth with different quarterbacks. This year, I mean, I look at it this way. You got, I think, four rookie quarterbacks that I think will be starting this year that have been given the job this year. Most of those four quarterbacks are, except for maybe Brandon Weaver, Cleveland, but are in a situation where they are getting protected. When you get protected, you're able to throw the ball. I think anybody you put back in the quarterback position, not necessarily anybody, but anybody with the skill level as Cobb or Skelton, he's running for his life. You look at the game now, he doesn't have a play where he can sit back on a five-step drop and find a receiver to throw the ball to. And it's against Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans have a pass-rushing guru as a coach, and he's got these linemen coming out. They all look like Pro Bowlers right now. But I think if you protect the quarterback, you give them time to be able to make that decision that they make the hit, whether they want to hit the running back out the backfield, hit a slant, or go for the long ball. If you don't have time, I don't care who's back there. You're not going to be able to get the job done.
Who would you pick, Cobb or Skelton?
I'm going with Cobb because I'm paying all this money. You got to do something.
Right.
Well, I agree with you on that. But bottom line, they don't protect them. Neither one of them.
If they don't protect them, Skelton's going to get in there anyway.
Exactly.
And let's go around the National Football League, and I want to start with Chad Johnson. I mean, we all know about a domestic dispute with his wife, Evelyn, and ultimately he was released by the Miami Dolphins. Does Chad get another opportunity? I don't think he gets another opportunity this year. What do you think? Chad gets another chance?
Man, that's a tough – I mean, as a player, my mind state said, yeah, man, get a guy another chance. But Chad's really not have putting too much on the bulletin board for the front office to say, okay, well, let's give this guy another chance. Because if you look at the front office aspect of it, I mean, he showed nothing with New England. He didn't come off of that season showing any type of promise towards another team, getting him a chance. Then going to Miami and leaving that last play on the field, that 3rd and 2 and missing that slant, it just showed, you know, like, okay, what are we leaving? What are you leaving on the field for us to say, okay, bring you in? And then you got to look at it money-wise, league minimum. I mean, is his 10th year or 11th year? So, I mean, if he takes, you know, the 1 year, I mean, that's still, money on the cap. But like I said, player-wise, I'm going to give the guy another chance. I mean, he's passionate about his job, things like that. It's just unfortunate he fell in love with a woman that's a little bit more, I guess when you say, exciting than he is, in a sense, for lack of better terms.
You look at the situation with his wife, and I mean, if you watch basketball wise and you just look at history, I know Chad had a little domestic dispute in college, but that was over a decade ago. But if you look at basketball wise, you would think the person that would be the more volatile one, the person that's more than likely to do the headbutting, would be his wife.
And I'm glad
you would think, but I mean, anything can happen.
We don't know all the details. We weren't there. We don't know all the details. But history has shown that media is going to automatically jump on the bandwagon of saying the guy did this and did that. I mean, we know he did that. But what happened leading up to that point? And I'm not a believer in anybody in domestic violence and putting your hands on a woman or a woman putting her hands on a man.
Definitely.
But you do have evidence of her being the kind of fiery one when it comes down to confrontation. And with Chad, his confrontations come from using his mouth. You never seen Chad. I mean, you have the one you said over a decade ago, but Chad hasn't fought nobody. Even on the football field, he hasn't fought anybody, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, in this situation, I just don't know what happened to let up. I really wish, for both of their sakes, they were able to keep it in-house. That's what I really wish would have happened. They could have kept it in-house, and therefore it would have been such a detrimental thing for as their, you know, careers, you know, as far as even doing another reality show, what they had, and him getting cut by the Dolphins. And to bring up something, I really hated the way that the head coach of Miami did the cut. It was so, like I know they touched on it, then they touched on it on ESPN, but it was just so, like he was scared to do it or something. Like, and I understand and I respect it because it's a hard decision, but it's still a business. Let's just go ahead and get to the point, like he was kind of beating around the bush with it. And, you know,
right.
he's saying it was all these other things. I mean, bottom line, he wasn't clicking with that coach. That coach wants something different for that team. It wasn't that he wasn't clicking, I don't think, chemistry-wise with the team on the field. He wasn't clicking with what I think that coach saw for the future. And he didn't
right.
state that, but it could have been a lot cleaner.
And I thought about the whole situation. I know he got on Chad for cursing at a press yeah. conference and whatnot, but if you look at Hard Knocks, I mean, it is reality TV. You have coaches who curse during practice and everything. And I know practice is a whole different situation than a press conference, but on some level, I mean, it is being seen by everybody, seeing your coaches cursing, even the coach himself, Joe Philbin, the head coach, cursing. To me,
right.
it's a little hypocritical for Philbin to go at and be angry at Chad for Chad Johnson cursing at a press conference. I understand that it is a press conference. It is more of a public forum, but at the end of the day, on Hard Knocks reality TV, we're seeing it all.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. I mean, you just go back a couple years ago, Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan was cussing every other word, and he
right.
was the head coach. So he set an example. I mean, and Chad, I mean, I think one thing, if Chad was showing up more on the field, I think it would have, you know, it would have been a lot more tolerable. If
right.
he was showing
and
up more on the field, if things would have been a lot more tolerable. He probably would, you know, it would last a little longer.
You know what, it comes
and,
down to this, and I used this analogy last week, and it comes down to this. Chad Johnson is that cute girl that had the bad attitude, and then that cute girl got fat. She got a little ugly, and now people don't want to deal with the bad attitude anymore.
Now they take the opportunity to flip the script on her. Now if she was cute, she'd get away with everything, right?
Basically.
Exactly. But
and that's
like
what happens with – go ahead.
And, Paul, you can't help but to compare the situation between him and T.O. now. I mean,
right.
T.O.'s getting a second opportunity with Seattle, and, you know, and he was more of a, you know, a character than Chad is. I mean, far as, like, really outbursts, like going after his teammates for his character issues on a team, than what Chad. Chad is a team player. He just has a mouth on him that he feels like he voices his opinion. But it's not even a voice of his opinion. He's just elaborating in his words on what he's talking about. When you ask him a question. And, you know, T.O.'s got a chance after an injury and a year off. So – I don't know. I mean, T.O.'s caliber of play was a little bit higher than Chad, but Chad was an elite wide receiver.
But you know what the only difference is? I mean, last year, Chad caught 15 balls for the New England Patriots throughout the whole season. T.O.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago with the Cincinnati Bengals was close to a 1,000-yard receiver. I think that's the difference. It comes down to production.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
It comes down to production. What have you done for me lately? That's what the league stands for.
We talked about Chad, and I want to go to Tim Tebow now. And
okay.
Last year for the Denver Broncos, all he did was win, no matter what. We see all the things. He got them to the playoffs. He won a playoff game. But I look at him, and he's not an NFL quarterback, in my opinion. He's just not. He essentially ran a college offense with the Denver Broncos. He is not an NFL quarterback, but – who knows what's going to happen with the Jets? I mean, Mark Sanchez hasn't played well in the preseason. Obviously, Tebow hasn't played well in the preseason. What's your view on Tim Tebow?
I'm going to start off with first this. I'm just waiting for Mark Sanchez to give the big bird to everybody. I mean, I'm waiting for him to snap. I'm waiting for Sanchez to snap because he is, you know, he's trying to keep his cool, but you see it kind of seeping out in some of his interviews. It seeps out a little bit. It's my huddle. I need everybody to listen to me. And he's starting to get some sacks and everything like that. The only thing that's saving him is that, you know, Tebow is getting sacked as well, too, in these games. And between the two,
right.
they've been sacked, what, 9 times or something more than that? But, I mean, Tebow, he just becomes that fan favorite. And it's something about his charisma. I don't know what it is. I do know what it is. It's just he's a people person. And people are starting, you know, just kind of jump on it. But he has not shown to be that quarterback that, you know, everybody expects a quarterback to be. But if Tebow
right.
can find in the right system or something like that, somebody take the time with him. I mean, because he can develop quarterback skills. I feel like he can develop those skills, and I believe he is developing those skills. I think that he can be somebody's starting quarterback. It's just going to take somebody to really adjust and adapt their offense around Tim Tebow and have enough time to be able to do that. And not just coming in the midseason. No, Denver, he came in midseason, and they adjusted to how they need to adjust, and they won games. Now, imagine him coming in and saying, okay, he's our starting quarterback, and we have the whole offseason develop an offense around him.
So you're talking Super Bowl caliber quarterback?
Hey, man, I didn't say Super Bowl caliber quarterback.
Okay.
You know, I didn't say that.
So I guess it doesn't matter then.
It doesn't be proven, man. But, I mean, is Sanchez a Super Bowl caliber quarterback?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, they have to prove themselves in a sense. I mean, we didn't think Eli was either at first. Just because
that's
the way
true.
He didn't pass. He didn't pass the eye test. When you looked at him, you're like, okay, yeah. Oh,
but Eli came
right
out
now.
Last year and told us, you know what, I'm a top five quarterback, and lo and behold, he was a top
What'd
five quarterback. He was an elite quarterback.
He proved it. All those touchdowns in the fourth quarter, comeback kid.
We're talking to former NFL player and actor Isaac Keys. And Isaac, you are doing big things as an actor. You won the L.A. Web Series Award for Best Actor in the hit web series The Therapist. And my wife, true story, my wife watches The Therapist. She likes The Therapist. I mean, how much did that mean to you to win that award?
You know what, man? That was like my little baby Oscar. I was smiling and I was excited about it, man. Just being acknowledged for, you know, the things and all the hard work you put into anything. And then let alone knowing that this was my next choice after football was to start acting. And to be able to see that the hard work I've put in has been acknowledged by, you know, the L.A. Web Fest. And then it was a project that would start off as just an idea, and we just decided to shoot it. And we shot it, and, you know, and it kind of grew from there. And now, I mean, it's like we're getting, you know, thousands of views. I mean, people can always go onto YouTube and catch it under Therapist G Media. It's Therapist, the letter G, Media. And you can go on there, you can see all the outtakes, things we did behind the scenes, and catch all the episodes on there. And actually, you know, while we started, we started doing season two. We're in post-production of that, so we're excited about that. You know, we're just trying to see exactly how we want to go about it. We've had opportunities to kind of look at different networks and try to see if they've taken on, and we're just excited about it, man. So it's going, and hey, man, just keep on working. Try to be the best I can be.
And you are being the best you can be, and you're doing big things with The Therapist, and you're doing big things with some plays. I know you did For the Sake of the Children back in April. Are you still doing that at this point?
Right now, I think we're waiting to see where else some other tour locations we're going to go to. We did finish up in Omaha, and then we did Memphis, and we did Jackson, Mississippi. So we're waiting to see how that's going to go. But I've been out here in L.A. doing some local plays, just finished one called Love's Holiday, which a lot of people enjoy. Had a great crowd come out here. There's a lot of energy. And I'm just trying to see what the next move is going to be. I've been doing a lot of things with hosting now just to kind of keep it, you know, out there. Hopefully it'll be out there for the Nation's Classic in Washington, D.C., for the Morehouse Howard Classic. And of course, big shout-out to Morehouse. I'm an alumni of Morehouse College. So hopefully be out there with doing some things with Pepsi. And, you know, so just kind of emceeing the stage, just kind of getting the crowd interacting. And I really have a passion and enjoyment for just kind of, you know, acting out with the crowd, man. So it's been going well.
And you're a man, obviously, of many hats, and you're also a McCafe man. With McDonald's. Tell us about that role.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, McDonald's gave me the opportunity, to be able to host some of the activations as a man in the cafe, or in the cafe line, and kind of, you know, continue to promote their frappes and smoothies and just their brand, because McDonald's really stands for being deeply rooted in the community 365 days of the year, and that's big to me as well, amongst a lot of other people. So they just kind of formed the opportunity to be able to kind of run the stage. I've been hosting the stage at CIAA in Charlotte, North Carolina, and also Essence for 2 years now. So it's just kind of like being able to run the stage, interacting with the crowd, the games and giveaways, and having talent come to the stage. I've been working with Pooch Hall in the game that showed up, Lamon Rucker from Why I Get Married To, and Meet the Browns, and Tyrese, Avant, and Tank. We had all types of different performers, from actors all the way to artists. So it's just been great. And the crowd has been great, and the support I've been getting from everybody has been great as well.
And also, you're a guy with a little bit of a criminal background, as you did some work on America's Most Wanted. How much fun was that for you?
And, you know, that was great. When I actually went on an audition for the America's Most Wanted one, I knew they wanted me to come play this, like, pimp type thug, and my agent was like, you know, I said, I don't look nothing like the guy. He's like, oh, just go in there and just do it. And when I got the size and the script, and I went in there, and I was like, and when I did it, the cast director said, you're that effing guy. He said, you're that effing guy. And it's like, I really was amazed at how easy it kind of came to me to be this character, to yell at this poor girl and to, like, really, like, grab her up. Like, I was throwing her in a van and all this type of thing, and I was a little scared myself. And I felt like I kind of scared her as well, because beforehand she was like, hey, just grab me. Like, don't tell me what you're going to do. Just grab me. And when I did grab her, like, she got so thoughtless, like, it was so real. And I felt so scared for her that I even had a conversation with her afterwards just to make sure she's all right. You know, what you have planned for today? You know, you okay? Everything's good, you know, just to make sure. But got the party, man. It was a great experience, man. I did not realize how many people watch America's Most Wanted on Lifetime, because I was actually kind of afraid to go out that night, because I was afraid, you know, they would have tased me and had me in handcuffs before they figured out it was a reenactment. So,
and you know what? I used to watch America's Most Wanted, but I never used to like America's Most watch it when I was home by myself. Got me a little scared, so a little paranoid. So I don't watch it anymore.
You would have been the guy that called on me if I was out of Universal Studios somewhere. I heard, oh, that's the guy right there.
Basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, I would say that's the effing guy right there.
That's the effing guy. Right.
And a couple years back, you were looking for love. Some would say in the wrong places, but you were looking for love on reality TV with The Ultimate Merger, Donald Trump's The Ultimate Merger. And at this point, what, 2 years removed from that, have you found love on a two-way street?
Love on a two-way street. Look at you. I can't say that, but I'm available. I think sometimes the hardest part is just making, you know, people say they're available, but not being available mentally. And I think at this point, you know, getting up older and things of that nature, and just kind of hitting that point of life where it's pretty much I've done so much that now I'm mentally available, that if the right person comes along, that I'm available mentally and open to really trying to take it to that next level. So I would say it like that. I put it that way.
Okay. And looking at this whole thing now, we saw you on Ultimate Merger. We saw some of the things you're doing. Are you eating better as an actor than you did as a football player?
I can't say that, because when I was playing, the check was coming every week. but at the same time, I'm not in the cold tub. I'm not in the training room, and I'm not worried about a concussion right now. Those type of things, that the physical part of it. But I think spiritually and, you know, mentally, I am. I mean, if I'm playing football, man, you know, when you're on the grind of, you know, trying to make a team, man, you don't sleep well at night all the time, just because you're having dreams about practice, you're having dreams about, you know, just a play that you may have messed up on, a thought you may have messed on. So it's a lot more things that go into that game. Like right now, these guys in this preseason, these young guys are just like wondering, man, am I going to make this team? What am I going to do if I don't make this team? I don't want to go back home. I don't know if my team is going to pick me up. There's so many different, you know, concerns that people have, that these young guys have, that the outside world can't even relate to in that sense, in that aspect. I mean, these guys are putting their lives on the line, literally. I mean, you just saw, Margiani's, I've got to say, correct me, the front returner, you know, just broke his tibia just like that. He wasn't expecting to do that. Just that quick, you know, the blink of an eye, things change.
It's life.
So, I mean,
it's life on the football field.
So I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, with that thing, man, I'm just, you know, I'm going for it. And that's what I'm happy with. I'm going for something. So that drives me to keep on going.
Right. I mean, and keep doing it, keep going for it. Keep doing the things that you're doing right now, because obviously you are doing big things. And you talked about a dream. Real quickly, what kind of dreams do you have?
Well, when I was playing, it kind of go hand in hand. But when I was playing, it was always kind of just, I mean, it's just, I dream a lot. Like, my dreams are so vivid. I pretty much dream about anything I need to take care of the next day, or things that are just on my mind. My mind is very active. So it's like times where I have to tell myself just to kind of relax my mind and put on the music or things like that, relax my mind and let the day go, so I go ahead and have peace at night. But it's just because I'm active. My mind is active. It's creativity. I wake up in the middle of the night and just write things down, just because I don't want to forget when I wake up in the morning. Things that I may want to do, or how I may want to say something when I'm on stage, or how I want to, you know, do this character if it comes about, or skits. So it's just, you know, having an active mind is kind of a gift and a curse, but it's, you know, we use it. We all have it.
And real quickly now, your website?
My website is isaackeys.com. It's pretty much a hub for, like, some of the things I've done with acting, and kind of just give people an insight, whether it's cast or directors, or just people just want to see what I've done thus far. All the episodes of the therapist are on there as well. But it's just, you know, it's kind of a hub, just to kind of, because, I mean, the key to this game is branding. Branding, yep. branding, who you are.
Fans, go to IsaacKeys.com. Check out some of the great things he's doing right now. Make sure you check him out on Twitter and follow him on Twitter at Isaac Keys. Isaac, as always, man, a pleasure talking to you. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And as always, let's do it again.
Hey, no doubt. Thank you for having me. And everybody that's listening, continue to support Paul and this show, because this show is amazing. I've always liked being on the show, and I always look and see who you got coming on and tune in myself. So thank you for having me, and you keep doing what you're doing, because you're an inspiration to a lot of people, along with the brand and a lot of people that's doing what they need to be doing. Go out there and just do it. So thank you for having me as well.
Appreciate the kind words. Take care, sir.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
Isaac Keys, the great Isaac Keys. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgam, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Go4Gam. Make sure you join us Saturday, as we're expected to be joined by actor Eric Layden. And Eric is a big-time fan of the Los Angeles Lakers, so we're going to talk to him about the Dwight Howard trade. Everybody, it was a pleasure. See you later. Take care. Bye.